Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
You know what I love, Josh?
The smell of napalm in the morning.
Bingo! Hey, everybody, how are you doing today? You're listening to the Command Zone podcast, also watching it. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
Oh my gosh, Battle Bonds. This set is what?
This set looks insane. So huge props
from?
To our buddy Gavin Verhey, yeah. Who is the lead designer of this set. He's very proud speaking about it online, and I think he should be. It looks really, really sweet. Plus, Tons of reprints
and important reprints, especially for Commander. A lot of the cards are meant for Two-Headed Giant, but they all say like all players, every other player, other opponents. So they're all very much formulated to be good in Commander as well. So Gavin, thanks, man. This came out of nowhere.
Yeah, there's a lot of people out there calling Battle Bond, by a nickname, Commander Masters. Except it's still only like $4 a pack. It's not $10 a pack. So it's
great.
Kind of the best of both worlds. We're going to do a full set review of this set. But first, we need to talk about our sponsors. This episode is actually brought to you by VRV, which is pronounced Verve. And Verve is a multi-platform streaming service.
That's right. So if you're an anime fan like me, you have access to Crunchyroll as well as Funimation. If you love K-dramas, you have access to that. If you love just internet content, you've got Rooster Teeth on there, Nerdist, Geek & Sundry, every single one of your favorite platforms, but now under one roof, so it's a lot easier to go in between shows, browse between them. And right now, we have a referral code for you to get a free 30-day trial.
Yeah, just go to vrv.co/commandzone, and when you use that link, you're not only supporting Game Nights, Command Zone, all of our content, but you're also trying out a really awesome service.
Yep, and both Josh and I have enjoyed it quite a lot.
Yeah.
Our other sponsor for the show is Ultra Pro. They make the beautiful playmats we have in front of us here. They make a lot of the product that we use on the show, themed playmats, themed sleeves, as well as Eclipse sleeves, guys. Eclipse sleeves.
In 100 packs now, and Relic tokens, pretty sweet.
Oh yeah, I like those a lot.
Every time I pull out a Relic token and put it on the table, never fails. Somebody goes, ooh, what is that? Those things are sweet.
Some people live for that moment in Magic, by the way. Like, yeah. That's the reason they play.
And the final way to support the show is directly if you go to patreon.com/commandzone. In fact, we call out one lucky patron every single episode, and this episode is dedicated to
Lucas Neff.
Lucas, you rock.
Thanks, buddy.
Okay, so there's one thing I wanted to talk about here really quick that's coming up, and a lot of people have started to ask us about it. Mm-hmm. So GP Vegas is happening in a couple of weeks from the time that you are hearing this. It's the 14th to the 18th of June in Vegas, of course. Now, it's a little different this year for us than it has been in recent years. For one, Jimmy, we're not sure yet if you're going.
Yeah, I've been about 50. I've been a coin flip,
yeah.
To speak of our last Battle Bond review course.
You're Zinder split?
Yeah, I'm Zinder split about whether or not I'm going to be able to make it. I would love to make it, but as a result, because I can't 100% confirm it at this point, Josh and I aren't doing the Commander meetup this year.
Yeah.
Also, we did one last year and we're still tired from it, honestly.
That's true. It's hard to do it every year. So we're not doing our big gathering, unfortunately, this year. It's just too hard if we don't know if Jimmy's going to be there or not. But something really cool is happening at the event. Channel Fireball is hosting a Commander Championship event.
Ooh.
It's going to be on the Friday, which is the 15th of June, the Friday of the GP. It's going to start at 11 a.m. And, you know, I have to say that I actually, they came to us and sort of asked our advice of how they should run such an event. And so some of this is patterned on some of our advice. So I'm really excited that they're doing this and they're really taking some cues from the community. I think originally they were going to do like a pretty hardcore tournament with like a lot of prizes to the people that win. And, you know, both of us were like, well, Commander,
this is Commander. Yeah.
This is Commander. We want to play. Like, if I go to an event like this, I want to play Commander. I don't want to feel bad for losing. And I don't really want to have to try that hard to win. I want to play my fun decks and meet people and have fun. So,
and be rewarded still to be able to go in there and play a fun deck, as well as the people that will inevitably decide to play, you know, better decks.
Yeah. So the way that they structure the tournament, I think, is really smart. So it's 5 rounds of Swiss. So you're put into pods. And so it will track if you win or lose and pair you accordingly. But each round will pay out prizes.
Mm-hmm.
So right now it's 60 tickets to the winner of each pod. But everybody else in the pod still gets 20 tickets. So
that's great value.
Yeah, you get something win or lose. You do that 5 times. And then at the end, they will cut to the top 4. The people that sort of won every round or whatever, depending on how many people are there. And when they cut to the top 4, those people will be playing for a slightly bigger prize pool for those last 4. For those people that or Spikey, they're playing competitive decks or whatever. Mm-hmm. But everybody else will have gotten to play 5 rounds of Commander. They'll have gotten some prizes along the way. And they're actually going to do some other stuff. So each round, they're going to vote for the coolest deck. Everyone will sort of anonymously vote after each round for the coolest deck they played against. And then at the end of the entire thing, they're going to choose the 4 players that got the most amount of votes. And those people will get an altered soul ring from Mark Tieden.
That is sick.
Yeah, and Mark is going to be on site already there. And also, each player that participates in the event in any way will get a playmat. And we're actually, Channel Fireball wanted us to reveal the playmat.
So
it is the soul ring playmat, the soul ring that Jeffrey Palmer animated and begins every episode of the Command Zone. So if you're watching the video, you're actually looking at the playmat. It's really sweet. And what Commander player doesn't want a soul ring playmat?
Especially on turn one. So thanks, Channel Fireball, for that. But that's cool.
You always have a soul ring on turn one.
Yeah, exactly. No matter what. Honestly, that's why I would play. You know, aside from the fact that if you play all 5 rounds, you're guaranteed 100 tickets mm-hmm. at the base minimum, right? And, you know, the nice thing about this is you're going to be there the entire weekend with a bunch of other Commander players. I would go to this event just to meet people, get their contact information, meet up later during the week. It's always great to have friends at the GP. That's what really makes it feel special.
That's a really good point, because it's on Friday.
Yeah.
So all the people that you meet, you know they're Commander players. You can play with them on Saturday. You can play with them on Sunday. And you get the playmat and 100 tickets no matter what. There is an entry fee. I believe it's $50. But just the playmat and the tickets almost make up for that if you happen to win a pod or whatever. I mean, the value seems really good. So
yeah, not to mention you, if you have the coolest deck, you get a customized card from a Magic artist. That's insane.
I need to come up with a really interesting deck. So
Josh, you can't go and spike that.
I can't win.
Could you
that,
imagine
actually.
If it was don't like, and the winner is Josh Lee Kwai, a relative unknown person in the Commander community?
Everyone would be like, hey, yeah, they would call. Yeah.
You're giving that away in the show, right, Josh?
So I will definitely be there and playing in that event. If Jimmy is at GP Vegas, he
will
be there.
Oh, I would definitely be there,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm 100%. Pretty excited about it. And they're calling it the Commander Championship event.
Dun, dun, dun,
so if you
dun,
do happen to win, I guess you can call yourself a Commander Champion. That's cool, too.
I mean, I'm down with it.
Yeah. Okay, let's go on to Battle Bond here. It's
very
time for
exciting.
Our set review. Jimmy and I are going to be looking up the cards on our phone because we don't actually have all the cards in front of us.
Yep, it would
be weird if we did. I guess with Game Night, it's not that weird. Okay.
So let's talk about the new mechanics before we dive into the set. There are a lot of cards. So we're going to talk about the mechanics, then we're talking about reprints, and then we're going to talk about the cards in the set. And of course, we always do best of at the end.
Look how many papers. This is...
Yeah, this is
okay,
be
strap
a,
in, everybody.
It's going to be a hefty one. All right.
New mechanics.
Buckle up. If you haven't already buckled up and you're in your car, shame on you. Partner with is the first mechanic. It's very similar to Partner from Commanders 2016, except there's a difference here. It only looks for a specific card when you play that card. So it can tutor for the card or have another player tutor for it, which is the interesting thing.
Yeah, so for Two-Headed Giant, because the set is designed around Two-Headed Giant, it partners with kind of has two modes. Mm-hmm. In Commander, most of the time, it means that it works like the Partner Commander in that you can have two creatures now in your command zone as your commanders, but Partner With will say a specific name. So I'm going to just take Gorm the Great as an example. Gorm the Great says Partner With Virtus the Veiled. That means those two commanders can partner together, but they can't partner with like Vile Smasher or something.
No, with each other.
Yeah, if you want both of them in your command zone, they can be with each other, but that's it. Or you could do like a mono green deck with Gorm the Great and not have the partner thing.
If you were at the commander table and you knew the other person, someone else at the table had that card in their deck, you could actually have them go fetch it out.
Yeah, that's true. So that's the other thing, that to a giant part that may be relevant in our format if you didn't have them as commanders and they're just in your 99. So when this creature enters the battlefield, target player may put the other one, the other partner, into their hand from their library. So you can target yourself, but you can target another person too. So they tutor for each other.
Yeah. And also we're told that if you open a booster pack with one of these, the other one is inside with it.
Yeah, so if you get one, you're going to get both, right? Yeah. So that you don't have to like get Gorm the Great.
And hope to crack the other one.
Yeah.
That, you know what the nice thing about that is that this is going to be a Two-Headed Giant format mostly. So when you're opening your booster packs, there's never going to be a feel bad of like, oh, I got all these partners, but none of them match with each other.
Sometimes you just get two rares in a pack.
Yeah.
It seems insane.
You could get two mythics. Also, if they're foil, Gavin says that they're both going to be foil in the pack too. Now that's nuts.
That's pretty crazy. That's pretty cool. So that's the first commander, that's the first mechanic. The second mechanic is called Assist. And this is a weird one, but it says another player can pay up to X amount of the cost of a spell with you. So X is the amount of generic mana that the spell costs, right? So if a spell costs, let's say, 5 and a blue, and you, and it has assist. That means you could pay a blue and then ask another player, hey, can you, do you want to pay up to five of this? And they can pay up to, so that spell may only cost a blue for you.
Yeah.
There's a counter spell in the set that I believe is three and a blue and has assist. So maybe something happens like a board wipe and they really don't want it to happen. And you're like, well, I can help you counter, I can cast the counter spell, but you got to give me the mana.
Yeah, because I may not have all of it at this moment.
Or I just only want to spend one blue, you know, but I'll let you counter it, you know, without the use of a card.
It's very interesting. You can only choose one player for this. I'm assuming the way it works rules wise is when you cast the spell, when it's on the stack or before someone else is tapping mana for it, you can take mana from someone's mana pool or ask them to pay for the cost at the same time as you.
Yeah, I actually asked this question on Twitter because I was like, well, can somebody like, can they screw me? Can I be like, okay, see my hand, I'm going to cast this. Are you going to help me? And then I play it and they go, never mind, I'm not going to. And then what happens? And they say, if it doesn't get paid, it goes back to your hand. So you can't really get, they can't cost you the card.
Right.
And you don't have to have the total amount of mana available. That was another question I had.
Okay.
Like, do I have to have all six mana available to even start to cast it? No. You basically just do your negotiations. It's a casual card, I think, in general. So I just go to Jimmy like, hey, listen, I have this card, but I only want to pay three, or I can only pay three of it. Can you pay the other three?
Yeah.
And he says yes or no. And if he says no, I can ask the next player, what are you? You.
Yeah, yeah.
And then and even if I guess at that point, we just pay it at the same time and they can't back out.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I guess it's kind of like that. You like look them down and be like, all right, tap your lands.
Yeah.
Me too.
I mean, if they do, then you can take it back, kind of,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I suppose.
Okay. That is the assist mechanic.
Nice. Good toss. All right. Friend or foe. This is similar to, you know, wild or free. A lot of the different conspiracy mechanics we've seen in the past. When you cast the spell, you designate each player around the table as a friend or a foe. And if they're a friend, they get a certain effect. If they're a foe, they get another effect. So
usually, like, the friends get a good effect,
Yes.
And the foes get a bad effect. These are really interesting cards, and it's going to be exciting to see how they play out, because some of them are like, all your friends get a land into play, and all your foes sacrifice an enchantment or artifact.
Yeah, which is absurd.
That's
a big difference.
I mean, if you know a person has a spell like that in their deck, like, how much nicer do you have to be to them in general?
Yeah.
It's weird. It's going to create some cool dynamics, I think.
Yeah, I really like that, because a lot of times for the like conspiracy, like Savala Stampede or whatever, it's wild or free. Both of them are bad for you.
Yeah.
Because the player gets a benefit regardless. But in friend or foe, you definitely help some people out. And I think it's a better version of the cards that, for instance, like you choose one player, they get this thing and you get this thing. You choose another player, they get this thing and you get that thing. You know, like I forgot that mechanic is called, but there's ones where, for instance, you'd give someone.
It was the one where Josh Kim gave me the all the elves.
Oh yeah, exactly. The big, in game nights. Cut to that. Show me getting real mad.
And then this is not a mechanic, but there are cards that refer to your team, so they might have an effect for your entire team.
Right.
Now, because Commander, there are variants we've talked about in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I think each playgroup is going to have to tackle like what your team means on certain other like variants and formats.
Yeah,
but in general, I believe if the teams are like known to everybody at the table, then that should work in that variant. And sometimes we play two-headed giant, or we've even played three-headed giant Commander before.
Yeah, that game
which
never
gets hairy.
Ended.
Yeah. Okay. So returning mechanics we usually talk about, but there are a lot because this is kind of a hybrid master set. It's kind of a reprint set in some ways. There's a bunch of new cards. There are a lot of reprints. In fact, speaking of reprints, we're not even going to be able to talk about all of them, and I don't want to read every single card, but there are some much needed and pretty expensive ones. There's a number of like $20 plus.
Oh, yeah.
Reprint.
Especially this first one. Doubling Season is back. New art. Looks amazing. We all needed this card back in our Commander lives. And it's finally getting reprinted.
Yeah, and it's
very
gotten
happy.
Super expensive. Seedborn Muse.
Yep.
Which is a card I just continue to put in more and more decks. And it was getting, I think, $25,
$30.
Yeah. True Name Nemesis, which is a legacy card. Nirkana Revenant was like $20.
I was up there. You know, it's another black mana doubler. It's a great card. Land Tax.
This card's actually not cheap either.
Yeah, because it's incredibly good if you have enough basics to search out with it.
Yeah. Diabolic Intent was one I was surprised with how expensive it was.
Yeah.
That's a demonic tutor, but you have to sacrifice a creature.
Still a tutor.
Mystic Confluence.
Now, this one had gone way up in price, and it was in the Commander set.
Yeah, it was only from the Commander set.
And this is one of the best counter spells out there, too, for the format.
Honestly, I think it's better than Cryptic Command.
I think so, too.
And
it's
so,
easier to cast in a lot of ways.
And a lot of times you get better benefit. You get, like,
you get to
draw two cards and
counter
the spell or whatever. Yeah. Greater Good.
Yeah,
that was good.
That's crazy.
Uh-huh. Magus of the Candelabra.
Great card.
Sower of Temptation.
Also a great card.
Sky Shroud Claim.
Just kidding. That card's awesome.
That card's sweet and was getting expensive. Mycosynth Lattice.
Yeah.
Another like $20-ish card, or was. Like, all these prices are going to be much lower now because the reprints got announced.
Thank goodness. And Mind's Eye, which is, you know, colorless card draw for your red deck.
Or white.
Or white, yeah.
So we probably missed a few in there. You know, Swords to Plowshares and some other, you know, stuff that Spell Snare, I think, is in there. But there's a lot of reprints. This set looks really sweet, and a lot of these are like big commander staples. Okay, enough about the old cards. We're going to start talking about the new ones. So there are
a lot of legendary creatures in this set because there are a lot of partner commanders. However, there are a couple of legendary creatures that aren't actually
They don't have partner with. Yeah. So the first one is Najeela, the Blade Blossom. Najeela costs 2 and a red.
I'm all about this card, by the way.
For a 3/2 legendary creature human warrior. It says, whenever a warrior attacks, you may have its controller create a 1/1 white warrior creature token that's tapped and attacking. That's whenever a warrior attacks. So if I have Najeela out and Jimmy attacks somebody with a warrior, I get to choose it if he gets a warrior token.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, do you have any of those friend or foe cards in your deck?
Yeah. Good time to ask.
But then Najeela also has a activated ability, and you know I like this.
The
activated ability costs Wooburg. So one of each color mana, which means that Najeela is actually a 5-color commander.
Oh, yeah. And it's a red commander, too, primarily, which I love it.
It's sweet. So you pay Wooburg, white, blue, black, red, and green, one of each color, colon, untap all attacking creatures. They gain trample, lifelink, and have haste until end of turn. After this phase, there is an additional combat phase.
Wow.
Activate this ability only during combat. So
Whoa. You
attack with Najeela and whatever else, and then pay Wooburg and untap all that stuff and attack again. And it even gives haste so that your little 1/1 warrior creature tokens can attack on the second attack, the ones you created.
Yep.
This card seems really good. I mean, it's kind of like Aggravated Assault on a commander now, right?
Yeah, but it adds Trample, Haste, and Lifelink. I mean, that's kind of crazy, right?
Yeah, but I mean, the extra attack step, because we just know from Commander that there's a lot of ways generally to get infinite attacks when you have this kind of effect.
Also, you can do this on other players. It's just untap all attacking creatures, and then they get another combat phase after that. You can only do this during combat, so you don't get a main phase between them. But you know what? It's still pretty nuts. Yeah, the card you're pulling up is really, it's one of my favorite cards in my token deck, actually.
Yeah, so this immediately goes infinite with Druid's Repository. So Druid's Repository, I misspelled it, so it's taking a second.
I got it. It's a 1 green-green enchantment that says whenever a creature you control attacks, put a charge counter on Druid's Repository, remove a charge counter from Druid's Repository, add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool.
So if you have 5 creatures and you attack, you'll get 5 counters on Druid's Repository, and you remove each counter to make Wooburg. Untap your stuff, attack.
Yeah, as long as you
have 5 counters on Druid's Repository.
Yeah.
Actually, you really only need... Yeah, I guess you need 5 because the warrior will be created after attacks are declared, so that extra 1/1 warrior won't.
Correct. It's upon count. Attack, yeah.
Yeah.
But if you lose one in combat, then you have another warrior that can do it again. So.
That's true. That's a good point.
Also, if you have a lot of warriors attacking, you make a lot of 1/1s, and that way Druid's Repository
even better.
And then you attack again, you make another set of 5. So even though they block every single one of them, you can just keep going and going and going.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Savage Ventmaw is another creature that creates mana when it attacks and could be used in this way.
Yeah.
Grandlord Rada, which is from Dominaria, also creates. Now, both of those creatures create mana in a combination of red and green, and so you'd need some way to sort of turn some of your mana into the other colors, or maybe it just helps you create those two colors, which case, you know, you don't have to have infinite attacks all the time. Maybe you just need to have 5 attacks. Like, that's a lot.
That's true.
That's going to win you the game a lot.
I'm definitely not going for infinite. I'm just going for enough. You probably also want, because Savage Ventmaw and Grand Warlord only make mana in a certain color, you probably want that card that can change the mana into other colors.
Right, Gemstone Array, and stuff like that. Yeah.
This next one I'm really excited about. It's Grothama, All Devouring.
This card's sweet.
So he's a legendary creature worm for 3 green-green. We finally got a legendary worm. He's a 10/8. And he says, other creatures have, whenever this creature attacks, you may have it fight Grothama, All Devouring, which means it deals its combat damage to it. It deals its damage to it, and Grothama deals its damage to it. So Anytime your creature attacks, you can have it just have take 10 damage. When Grothama leaves the battlefield, each player draws cards equal to the amount of damage dealt to Grothama this turn by sources they controlled. So, let's say, easiest case, I play Grothama, and I have, he's a 10-8, and I have 2 4 power creatures on the board. Those creatures go to combat, they attack, and then I'm like, you know what? I want both these creatures to fight Grothama. They both fight Grothama. Everything dies, essentially, because 10 damage to a creature is probably going to kill it. And when it leaves the battlefield, each player draws cards equal to the amount of damage dealt to Grothama this turn by sources they controlled. So because I dealt the minimum of 8 damage total, I'm going to draw 8 cards when this card leaves
the
battlefield.
So sweet.
Now imagine I had some just arbitrary like 30 power creature, and then I had that fight Grothama. You are drawing 30 cards minimum, because that's how much damage was dealt to this card. And it's weird because other players are going to want to do it too, but they're going to have to lose their creatures as a result. They have to have at least 8 power on the board. Imagine the blowout if they have both of them choose to fight it and you get rid of one of their cards. I mean, Grothama is just weird and it's awesome, and so I really awesome. Want to make a deck around
it's
this.
It's so awesome. I can't imagine how it's going to warp the game around people being like, oh man, normally I would do this, but I actually want to just draw a bunch of cards.
Yeah.
I want to fight Grothama. Yeah, that deck probably has like pump spells to like blow them out when they try and do that.
Or indestructible spells, ways to make sure that Grothama does not die. Very, very interesting.
A card like Foe Razor Regent came to mind for me. This is a card from Dragons of Tarkir, I think. It's a 4/5 for 5 green. It says when Foe Razor Regent enters the battlefield, you may have it fight target creature you don't control. But whenever a creature you control fights, put 2/1/1 counters on it at the beginning of the next end step.
Oh, gosh.
So Grothama could just grow and grow and grow and become very hard to kill.
Yeah, because each turn you just... and it pairs great, too, because Commander Anthology now reprinted Conjurer's Closet that you also wrote down here, which is at the beginning of your end step, you may exile target creature you control, then return that card to the battlefield under your control.
Yeah, so one thing to notice about Grothama is that it says when he leaves the battlefield, everybody draws cards equal to the amount of damage that they've done to it, right? And it doesn't even have to be damage from fight, too. You could fireball or something and draw a bunch of cards. So if you Conjurer's Closet it, that would allow you to do things like attack with one creature that can't quite kill it, like that only does 6 damage
to it. Let's say you have an indestructible 2/2.
Yeah.
Or anything.
Swing it, have it fight Grothama, and then Conjurer's Closet.
Gonna draw
flicker
cards.
It, draw 2 cards.
This thing is ridiculous.
Teamer Sabretooth was another one I liked because, again, leaves the battlefield, and Teamer Sabretooth allows you to bounce Grothama back to your hand, and that would trigger. And you can also make Teamer Sabretooth indestructible when you do it, so you might bounce another creature, attack, fight the Sabretooth with Grothama to draw 4 cards.
Jeez Louise.
Bounce it. That seems like a really good combo. Grothama just is sweet. Like, you're just... Everyone's sending their dudes to fight the big, dumb monster.
Yep. And they might draw a bunch of cards.
They get all the glory if they slay it.
I just like the idea of baiting other people into trying to kill this thing.
I think that's a big part of that deck is like actually having like giant growth type stuff where you're like, ha-ha. So your dude just died for nothing.
Get wrecked,
that's
dude.
The worst feeling ever. I'll send my 2 creatures at Grothama.
It's like, fine, I'll lose them both, but
I'm going to draw 9.
Draw like 9 cards, yeah.
And then you just lose them and they giant growth and you get nothing.
Whoops. Oh, that would suck.
I can't wait to do that to somebody. Okay.
Okay, let's talk about some more of the partner with commanders.
Okay, you're going to do Krav. I'm going to do Regna. Sure. So that way we're set up to talk about it.
Yeah, because it's hard to... We're like trying to figure this out on our phones right before the full card list is released.
Yeah, there's no... Wizards usually releases their own image gallery, which makes... But it's a little easier to find because
this pretty early,
they're alphabetical and whatnot, but this is harder. Okay.
All right, so Krav the Unredeemed. 4 and a black for a legendary creature demon. Gives a 3/3. Partner with Regna the Redeemer. So we'll just say this once again. When this creature enters the battlefield, target player may put Regna the Redeemer into their hand from their library, then shuffle.
Or they can both start in your command zone as your commanders.
Correct. All right. So Krav says, pay black, sacrifice X creatures, and then target player draws X cards and gains X life. Put X +1/+1 counters on Krav the Unredeemed.
So you sacrifice creatures, draw that many cards, gain that much life, and then Krav gets that much bigger.
Now keep in mind that this doesn't care about the power or toughness of the creature. It's just how many creatures you sacrifice. So you're going to want this in the deck with a lot of tokens or small creatures that are expendable or that are being pumped out by cards, you know, that or will give you tokens.
Yep. Okay, so Regna is the partner. Regna the Redeemed, partner with Krav, obviously. It's 5 and a white for a 4/4 flyer. It says at the beginning of each end step, if your team gained life this turn, create 2 1/1 white warrior creature tokens. Okay, so obviously how this works is you get, you sacrifice a couple creatures to Krov.
Mm-hmm.
That lets you draw X cards and gain X life. And because you gain that life, Regna actually creates two white warrior creature tokens. And that's at the end of, at the beginning of each end step. So
yeah,
that will create two warriors. And then during Jimmy's turn, I can activate Krov, sacrifice those two warriors, draw two cards, gain two life. And then at the Jimmy's end step, Regna will create two more warriors. And now I can do that on the next turn and the next turn.
And again, and again.
So getting them both out is actually very powerful.
Yeah.
Because you're basically saying, pay a black, gain two life, draw two cards, which
every
is insanity.
Every single end step.
Yeah. I'd say the downside is that, how much does he cost?
He costs six? Five, and she costs six.
So it's a five drop and a six drop, and you have to get them both out. They both have to live.
And you have to have enough mana afterwards to activate, because if you play both of them and then they just get rid of one, you're going to feel real bad.
Yeah, and I wish Regna had like lifelink or something, so at least she could work with herself. She has no way to gain life on her own. At least Krov, sacrifice creatures and
if you're making a black-white deck, you will definitely be gaining a lot of life for sure. But yeah, it's really interesting. It's obviously, I think all of the partner with commanders are pretty fragile because they depend so much on each other. But at the same time, Krov still works to give you life and to give you cards. And if a deck wants to be sacrificing a lot of things, he does that as well.
Yeah, this sacrifice outlet and sacrifice outlets are just good. I put down Anointed Procession as a card that would almost certainly go in a deck like this.
Certainly.
Okay.
All right. Next up, we have Korvath Bright Flame and Sylvia Bright Spear. So
they are bright.
They are bright.
Creature so bright.
I love Korvath because he's a 5 and a red legendary creature dragon. He's a 3/4, or she's a 3/4. She could be she. Partner with Sylvia Bright Spear, and Korvath has flying and haste, and knights your team controls have flying and haste. So he gives every single knight that your deck has flying and haste.
But it's a dragon itself?
It's a dragon itself. It's not a knight. It's just a drago.
Okay. Quende, Pride of Femeref.
Wait, you mean Sylvia Bright Spear?
Oh, sorry. Servant. Why did it change it on me? I'm like, hang on.
Yeah, I got you.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, phones. I'm still learning how to use them. No, that's something Josh old people
old
say.
Old man.
Sylvia Bright Spear. Okay, that makes more sense. 2 and a white for a 2/2. Partner with Korvath, obviously. Has double strike. And dragons your team control have double strike. So not just you, but any dragons your team has. Doesn't matter very often in Commander. But so Korvath pumps her and she pumps Korvath.
Yep. But it's just dragon specifically, and it's not specifically, you know, Korvath has this. It's every dragon you have has double strike. And Sylvia Brightspear, all of a sudden, if you get Korvath out with her, she's a 3-drop by the way, and Korvath is a 6-drop. You get to have a 2/2 flying haste double striker.
Interesting, because you can build either a knight deck or a dragon deck.
Yeah. Or
with
both
these color combinations. Or you could build a dragon knight deck.
Or you could just not play Boros.
I said that out loud, it sounds cool. Or you could just not play Boros.
Yeah, sorry guys.
All right.
Okay. I mean it's tough. All right, the next up we have Gorm the Great, who pairs with Virtus the Veiled. So Gorm the Great, we mentioned at the beginning of the show. 3 and a green for a buff dude. He's 2/7. A legendary creature, giant warrior. Maybe not so buff, but he's definitely tough. He's got Vigilance, and Gorm the Great must be blocked if able, and Gorm must be blocked by 2 or more creatures if able. So he has Menace plus must be blocked.
I mean, he's...
If able.
So he doesn't have Menace. They could block with one if they only have
only
one.
Only had one, but if they have two, they have to block with both.
Right. Now, if they have 3, they get to choose which 2. They don't have to block with all 3.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a weird lure. So Gorm partners with Virtus the Veiled, and Virtus is 2 and a black for a legendary creature, an Azra Assassin. Azra's a new creature type haven't seen before. Virtus is a 1/1 and says, Virtus has Death Touch, so a 1/1 with Death Touch for 2 and a black, and says, whenever Virtus the Veiled deals combat damage to a player, that player loses half their life rounded up.
Oh, so that means Gorm is crashing in and Virtus is right behind him.
Gorm's like clearing the way or causing commotion over here, making 2 creatures block it and letting Virtus get through and sort of stab him in the back when they're not looking.
Yeah, he's got like a sickle, so he's like slicing him in the back.
That's pretty cool.
I like that. It's not that great in Commander, I don't think. I mean, anytime you're trying to sneak in a combat damage like that, I think it's pretty hard. But if it does work and you have other ways of getting your creatures through as well as playing Gorm, I could see this being a fun combat-based deck, just about having people's lives out of nowhere with Virtus the Veiled.
I think you can get a little tricky. Like if you can give Virtus the you can give double strike maybe. So it hit twice because it's on combat damage. Would half it and then half it again. So 75% of their life would be gone. Or maybe like wound reflection. You play wound reflection afterwards. That just kills them, right? They lost half their life and then wound reflection.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, wound reflection is pretty funny here.
And then Gorm, I thought, was probably good with Doran because it's a 2-7. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, it's a 7-7 that you have to block with two creatures and you're probably going to eat both of those creatures or at least one of them.
Holy crap, that is actually interesting.
So,
okay.
All right.
Well, the next up is the card that we previewed. It's Akun, Eye of Chaos, and Xandersplit, Eye of Wisdom. Now, we talked about these extensively on our other set review. On our review of it when we previewed that card. We'll have the link below. We recommend you guys listen to that. We go pretty in-depth about coin flip decks, how these cards make it possible. But Akun...
That was last episode.
That was last episode, right. Akun says, 4 and a red for a 3-3 legendary creature Cyclops Berserker. He partners with Xandersplit, Eye of Wisdom. At the beginning of combat on your turn, flip a coin until you lose a flip. Whenever a player wins a coin flip, double Akun's power and toughness until end of turn. So he's a 3-3, you go to a 6-6, 12-12, 24-24, yada, yada, yada. And you keep flipping coins until you are done flipping coins.
Until you lose.
Yeah.
So you call heads, it's heads, you win. You call heads, it's tails, you lose.
Yep. That's how coin flips work.
Okay, so then Xandersplit is 4 and a blue for a 1-4 homunculus legendary creature partner with a cone. At the beginning of combat on your turn, flip a coin until you lose a flip. Same deal. But whenever a player wins a coin flip, draw a card. So again, these are whenever a player, both of them are. So anybody else flipping coins, which probably it's you. It's probably you.
And both of these cards will be flipping coins if they're both out on the battlefield each turn.
True. Until you lose, too. So they could potentially flip a lot of coins together. So you could draw a bunch of cards and make a coin really big.
Yep. The obvious combo here is Krark's Thumb, which is from Myrdhinn, which is a 2-drop legendary artifact. If you would flip a coin, instead flip 2 coins and ignore 1. So you have a much higher chance of winning. Also, every single time you win with both those coin flips, if you win both, then you get to trigger all their abilities twice as well. So pretty cool. You know, I think I'm actually going to build that deck.
I want to build two because it just sounds like a fun deck. I could flip it coins. Who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, exactly.
It feels like Wedge with Ruhan rolling all the dice.
Let's
to
not
smack
talk
people.
About Wedge smacking me with that card. That was sad. All right, next up,
I thought it was fun. That's why I want
to
do it.
Of course. I mean, I'm trying to get some of that luck back in my side.
Oh, Lords of Chaos.
Lords of Chaos. You're right. I didn't pray hard enough. I'm sure Prof would agree, too.
Yes, I'm sure he would.
All right. Pierre Imaginative Rascal, 2 in a green for a legendary creature human. He's a 1-1. He partners with Toothy, Imaginary Friend. I love that name. If one or more counters would be put on a permanent your team controls, that many plus one of each of those kinds of counters are put on that permanent instead. So not just plus one counters, any kind of counter. So
Planeswalker Loyalty.
Planeswalker Loyalty.
Yeah, that's, I think, the big thing because we don't have a lot of things that affect Planeswalker Loyalty in that way. And this is also a... Tuna green, also in green, doubling season. If you're playing Super Friends, you're almost certainly running green.
And this is on permanence, by the way, so you can't get infected to death just by having Pierre out.
Right, and it won't affect like your experience counters if you have like Marin or something. And then Toothy is the partner. Toothy, Imaginary Friend, 3 and a blue for a 1-1. Partners with Pierre, obviously. Whenever you draw a card, put a +1/+1 counter on Toothy.
Wow.
Sort of Chasm Skulker.
It is, yeah, same mana cost, too.
When Toothy leaves the battlefield... draw a card for each 1/1 counter on it. So it's basically Chasm Skulker, but instead of making squid, you make you draw cards. And also it leaves the battlefield, not dies, which is a lot better, right? It's going to happen.
Yeah, but Chasm Skulker just keeps on going, too. So it's interesting because the 3-3 turns into a 6-6 to a 9-9. So you get...
No, you're thinking of deep... you're thinking of Reform.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
You run it in your Marchesa deck. Trust me, I know, because it's killed me a few times.
That card is pretty sweet. This is fun. I mean, obviously, if you get both of them out, it's a 3-drop into a 4-drop, so... As soon as you play Toothy and draw a card, you're putting 2+1/+1 counters on it. You're guaranteed to get 2 cards back, so that's really good value.
Yeah, and I think that's the best thing about them is they are lower casting costs, it seems like, than the others, because there's a lot of 5s and 6s. Like, Xandersplit and Akun, it's cool, but, like, that's a lot of mana between the two things.
Yeah, seriously.
And I think Pierre, at 3 mana, is actually at a good spot because you want to play it before you play a Planeswalker.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for 3, it seems pretty good.
It does. All right, this one's really interesting. We actually have new Planeswalkers, and spoiler alert, these Planeswalkers can be your commander. It says it on the card itself.
And they have partners with.
Yeah, so if you open one of these in the pack, you're getting 2 legendaries or 2 mythics.
I want to open a foil.
Dude, could you imagine? Could you imagine?
I don't want to imagine. I want reality.
All right. 4 red for a legendary planeswalker, Rowan. Her name is Rowan Kenrith. She comes in with 4 loyalty. Her +2, during target player's next turn, each creature that player controls attacks if able. So +2, that's nice. It goes up to 6.
I wish it goaded everybody so they couldn't attack you, because they can attack
that'd
you.
That'd be cool.
It just makes them attack, yeah.
Her -2, Rowan Kenrith deals 3 damage to each tapped creature target player controls. So you're imagining you're doing this 1-2, right? You're making every creature attack, and then you're able to do 3 damage to each tapped creature that they just tapped. Her -8, ultimate, target player gets an emblem with, whenever you activate an ability that isn't a mana ability, copy it. You may choose new targets for the copy.
I like that one.
I like that one too. So you're activating a lot of abilities here.
You're like Galena twice, yeah. Or you know, Tim twice, or somebody.
Planeswalker twice.
Activate an ability of a permanent.
Yeah.
Yes, Planeswalker twice. Basalt Monolith, it goes infinite right away.
Yep.
Because on Basalt Monolith, you're actually copying the untap ability on Basalt, not the tap ability.
Yeah.
So you can.
Just keep tapping it and untapping it twice.
Because you untap it twice when you untap it.
You tap it to the in response to the second ability going on the trigger, yeah.
So that seems good, but it's an ultimate. Planeswalker ultimates generally are very good. The brother of Rowan is Will Kenrith. 4 blue-blue for a legendary planeswalker. Comes in with 4 loyalty. Partner with Rowan.
I like
can
this.
Be your commander.
Legendary planeswalker.
Yeah.
Will.
+2, until your next turn, up to 2 target creatures each have base power and toughness 0/3 and lose all abilities.
Hey, so it turns the creatures that Rowan
is making attack. Yeah, yep. It turns them into 0/3s. And then the -2 is target player draws 2 cards. Until your next turn, instant sorcery and planeswalker spells that
draws the 2 cards, yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah, it's two-headed giant, right? It's designed for two-headed giant. So you can make somebody else draw the cards, or yourself, which is what you're going to do in Commander, which means that your instant sorceries and planeswalkers cost 2 less to cast.
That's actually insane. It's not a one-time use. It's every single instant sorcery and planeswalker.
If you untap with Will, a lot of decks can probably win from there, because that can create 10, 12, 14 mana, maybe?
Yeah. And he is a 6-drop, so it makes him a bit harder to cast. But that also means that you get to cast his partner for 2 red-red, which isn't bad. But it's interesting. I don't know.
Cast Will first, right? Because then you turn the 2 worst threats into 0/3s.
Or you get a mana reduction if you think he's going to live on the board.
Yeah. But you can protect. He can protect himself, right?
Mm-hmm.
You go, normally you play a planeswalker and somebody can maybe attack it. And you go, well, those 2 things are 0/3s. Now he's going to live.
Yeah.
Then you activate the negative ability.
On your next turn.
And at the very least, play Rowan for cheap.
Yeah.
Or you maybe just go off and cast like 4 instants because they're way cheaper and just win that way.
Yeah.
And then the -8, target player gets an emblem. Oh, we didn't mention this. Rowan and Will both say target player gets an emblem. So you don't even have to put the emblem on yourself. You could give the emblem to another player. That's probably the first time we've ever seen that.
Yeah.
So in Will's case, target player gets an emblem with, whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, copy it, you may choose new targets for the copy. So you fork every instant or sorcery you play after that. I'm saying you because 9 times out of 10 in Commander, you're going to target yourself with these
99
abilities.
99 times out of 100.
Yeah, but maybe you're in a Secret Partners game.
Yeah, that's
true.
That's a good point.
Emperor or Star.
Man, could you imagine that's how you announce who your partner is? Like, I'm going to give you the emblem. Everyone's like, no! He's the instant sorcery deck! No!
Pretty cool. I'm still down on Planeswalkers as commanders in general, so...
This seems like a very interesting build around. It's also very table dependent because it means, you better hope your opponents have creatures that can attack, I guess, if you want to really fully make use of it. Or maybe it's better if they don't because you won't get attacked by them.
It seems totally fine power level wise, though, because they're 2 6-mana commanders.
Yeah.
So,
And it's red and blue, known for shenanigans and trickery and going infinite, though. So there's a lot of possibility there.
Yeah. Okay. So now we're going to go on to the cards in each color. Again, we're not going to talk about every card. There is a warrior tribal sub theme here. We didn't talk about a lot of those cards because if you're building a warrior deck, use those cards. Okay.
I love this card, by the way, because it's very similar to one of my favorite cards. It's Arena Rector instead of Academy Rector. Now, Arena Rector is same mana cost, 3 and a white, and it's a human cleric 1/2. When Arena Rector dies, you may exile it. If you do, search your library for a planeswalker card, put it onto the battlefield, and shuffle your library.
you cheat into play a Planeswalker.
A Planeswalker. It can be a Nicol Bolas. It can be a
Ugin.
I mean, honestly, I think you're finding Ugin.
Elspeth.
Oh my gosh. So amazing. Arena Rector. Academy Rector does that, but for an enchantment.
Think if you had both the Rectors. And you sack one and put Doubling Season in place.
Oh, you're
sack
about to
the
wreck
other,
some face of anything.
You wrecked her some face.
Yeah, you are done. No one's going to be able to keep up. Because you get Doubling Season and then you get a Planeswalker. Done, right? Like, because one gets an enchantment.
You better check yourself before you
wreck yourself. Bingo.
Yeah, that card seems definitely candidate for best card in the set. Cheating things into play, we always say one of the most powerful things you can do. Academy Rector is an extremely powerful card.
It's up there.
And there's no reason that Arena Rector wouldn't be just as powerful because, again, it's cheating in just a very powerful type of card. All right, the next white card is Together Forever. It's white for an enchantment. When it comes into play...
The art is so good on this set.
Yeah. So the set, I want to say...
The flavor?
Yeah, the flavor of the set is Gavin sort of had this idea, or I don't know if it was only Gavin, but the idea is kind of an ode
to... I know that Mel contributed to it as well.
Yeah, Mel was involved, and Sean Main, I think, was involved too. So I don't know who came up with the idea to build the theme of the set, but it's kind of around esports and...
Yeah.
And like arena battling in esports, kind of.
There's so a special plane where it's all about battling, and you're...
It's like Gladiator Arena,
yeah,
right?
But you're paired up with someone every single time, so you go into battle with all these people.
But yeah, it was supposed to, I mean, it was very much inspired by like esports and stuff like that. So, okay, Together Forever, white enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, support 2, which means you put a 1/1 counter on each of up to 2 target creatures. And then you can pay 1, choose target creature with a counter on it. When that creature dies this turn, return that card to its owner's hand. So the counter doesn't have to have been placed there by Together Forever.
Yeah, it doesn't even need to be a +1/+1 counter.
And it's one generic mana. I think this card is actually really good and gives white some... This is a way to give white some card advantage. It's not quite the same as drawing a card, obviously, because a lot of times we say card advantage is partly about hitting your land drops and things like that. But this kind of, it can substitute in the right deck. You would have to be able to put counters on your stuff.
Venture for the Meek, you know, you get to replay some stuff. Now, look, you're going through some hoops to get this going, but Cathar's Crusade in this, you know, that seems pretty viable.
If this was not in mono white, we wouldn't even talk about it. But the fact that it is and white needs any card advantage they can get, I think it's worth at least thinking about in decks that can put counters on stuff.
Together Forever. All right, next up we got Play of the Game. It's a 6 white sorcery.
Play of the Game, huh?
Play of the Game.
Yeah.
It's a sorcery, but it has assist, so it means another player can pay up to 6 of the spell's mana cost, of the generic mana, not the white mana cost, but of the 6. And it just says exile all non-land permanents. Now that is a powerful board wipe.
That is, you know, there's a lot of points in the game where one person's so far ahead that you could very easily, I think, find someone to like split the cost with you.
Oh, 100%. This is one of the few ways you can beat a board that just has everything. Unless, of course, they play Teferi's Protection.
Okay, fair enough. But it's 8 mana.
Yep.
But if a card said exile all non-land permanents.
And said 8 mana.
And said 4 mana. How good's that card?
Oh, man, that card is absolutely out of control.
2 white. Well, I think you could easily make that happen.
Yeah.
In a lot of scenarios where it's like, this is all, it's going to be useful. Actually, it doesn't have to be archenemy.
Mm-hmm.
If there's 2 players that are ahead, you go to the other player.
Yeah.
And I think this card's actually going to be really good. And yeah, I just think the card's good. And it exiles?
Yeah, that's the insane part. Also, honestly, 6 white exile on non-land permanents, I probably would play it.
I mean, that's playable, but the fact that sometimes it's 4 mana or maybe even 2.
2, yeah.
If it's ever 2... I want to know who the fast talker is that pulled that off, because if I'm the person, I don't care. I'd still be like, well, you got to pay more than 2. Like, I'll pay half of it.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
The next one is Regna's Sanction. It's 3 and a white for a sorcery. It says, for each player, choose friend or foe. So this is our first friend or foe card. Each friend puts a +1/+1 counter on each creature they control.
Jeez.
Each foe chooses 1 untapped creature they control, then taps the rest.
Wow.
This seems like a game ender.
Yeah, oh yeah. You just make everyone...
You just be like, your creatures are buffer, and you have 1 blocker.
Yeah, and then I'm going to pass the turn to the guy, and so everyone's tapped out, you're like, attack.
Yeah.
And then, hey, you're going to attack with those creatures that just got way buffer? Attack.
Yeah. I like this card also because there is scenarios where you can sort of have a neutral... you can send sort of a neutral delegation. Like, you don't have a lot of creatures. I'll still name you as friend because I won't hurt you.
Right.
You know? Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I, the friend or foe stuff, I'm, I,
It's I really make need to play some, with it. I think it's going to make for some fascinating commander games. Yeah. Because you, I mean, you do that to someone, they're going to go, excuse me? Like, what? I'm your foe? You're literally calling them a foe, right? Like, that doesn't get more heavy-handed than that when it comes to making allies on the battlefield.
I think it'll really even out some archenemy situations.
Yes.
Too, where 100%. Like...
I mean, even just the assist on that last on play of the game, you know?
Yeah, like, exactly.
That's just absurd. All right, next up, we got bonus round.
We're into red cards now.
Yeah, I just jumped right in. It's the hasty thing to do. One red for a sorcery. Until end of turn, whenever a player casts an instant or sorcery spell, that player copies it and may choose new targets for the copies. So 3-mana sorcery, it will fork every single instant or sorcery you play that turn. But
whenever a player casts
an instant. So if someone else is holding on to instants, oh my gosh, they're going to double up too.
Yeah, this is a player. So any instant or sorceries you play or anyone else plays, if they had Velkin Horror Router or something. Yeah. A ley line. But also, this is like, fork everything I play for the rest of this turn.
Yeah.
It seems insane in like Mizzix or something like that.
Definitely seems insane in Mizzix when it just costs red.
Mizzix's Mastery seems really good with this card.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that seems... that card's...
If you're casting Mizzix's Mastery in the Mizzix decks, you have to be winning.
It's crazy to win. Because fork costs red, right? That just forks one thing.
Yeah.
Bonus round costs one red. So for one more, I'll fork everything.
Woo! Like,
yeah.
Turn on the disco lights. We are going to town.
All right, the next red card is Korvath's Fury.
That's the dragon.
That's a 4 and a red for a sorcery. For each player, choose friend or foe. For each friend discards all cards from their hand, then draws that many cards plus one. Korvath's Fury deals damage to each foe equal to the number of cards in their hand.
So you're just sometimes nugging someone for like 4 or 5 damage, but you could also nug everyone for damage and then for 5 mana, wheel plus one.
Yep. Wheel plus one is pretty good. So you replace the card you cast, which was Korvath's Fury. Now everybody else gets plus one, but they just have that many cards in their hand. So I like it. I like it a lot. Probably good in Necrostar decks and things like that too.
Yeah, definitely. I like the fact that usually these kinds of spells really get people. If you know that someone's just sitting on stuff, you know, be like, ha-ha, wheel. And that will definitely
get... Yeah, this is the one where people could be like, choose me as foe. I'll take 4 damage. Yeah, I please, want my please, hands.
And you're like, friend. That's going to be really
weird.
And then
they can't get mad. You're like, no, what? I named you as a friend.
I named you as a friend. Yeah, it said so on the card, dude. Come on, man. Just calm down. All right, Stolen Strategy.
This is a new staple, I think, in Mono Red and definitely Boros.
Oh, it 100% is.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. 4 and a red for an enchantment. It's only fitting I read all the red cards if I can. 5-mana enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, exile the top card of each opponent's library. Until end of turn, you may cast non-land cards from among those exiled cards, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast those spells. Red card advantage, but with everyone else's deck, it's kind of like a Tali a little bit.
It's like a Tali, but it happens every turn.
Yeah, at the beginning of your upkeep, and you have until the end of your turn to do it, you could get some insane stuff in red. Like, you can make dreams come true.
You can make dreams come true, Jimmy.
In mono red, finally.
I wish it was 4 mana, not 5, but it's still good.
Yeah, I mean, I think at 4 mana, it's pretty insane. At 5 mana, though, it's still very powerful.
It's better than, like, Mind's Eye, right? Mind's Eye is a card you're kind of forced to run in red, mono red and Boros decks and mono white. But it sucks because you have to have that additional mana available to draw the cards.
Yeah.
Stolen Strategy is just like, once it's out, it does its thing. So you just...
Works great with Braid of Fire and Instance, by the way, because now you could potentially hit other things to cast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so, really good. Pretty cool. The last red card, this is just an interesting one. I don't know that it's good, but it's Stadium Vendors. It's 3 and a red. It's a goblin. It's a 3/3. When it enters the battlefield, choose a player. That player adds 2 mana of any one color they choose.
It's cute. I like it.
I don't think we've ever seen anything quite like this in red, right?
Yeah, giving someone else mana of all things in any color, it'll fix them? That's really bizarre.
Now, you can choose yourself, so it can kind of like fix your mana for 4 mana, but I could see this as being a pretty good olive branch of like, hey, I don't want you to attack me. How about I'll give you 2 mana?
Yeah,
there's a lot of instances where I'd be like, okay, I'll take the 2 mana.
Yeah, but you need to be able to use it right then and there, right?
True. Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, you're right. It's just a very interesting thing for red to have.
Okay. Let us go on to green.
Oh, yeah. So this card's pretty nutty, too. It's Bramble Sovereign. 2 green for a creature Dryad. That's a 4/4. Nice.
4 mana, 4/4. Yeah.
Whenever another non-token creature enters the battlefield, you may pay 1 and a green. If you do, that creature's controller creates a token that's a copy of that creature. Everybody gets some copies.
If you want.
And you have 1 and a green.
And that can be you.
Yeah.
And you're choosing. Well,
usually you. Yeah, so non-token creatures, they get a copy of it. It sticks around. It doesn't go away, and that's important. You know, you can play Crater Hoof twice.
Yeah, that'd be
good. Not that you need to be honest.
I think you can do things like Palancron.
Oh, yeah.
Palancron's going to untap the lands and allow you to sort of probably go infinite immediately.
Oh, 100%, you can go infinite.
Yeah, I think Felidar Guardian can probably untap the land that you use for it and do some stuff.
Yeah, just making a bunch of Felidars.
I mean, you could probably... Okay, I'm not doing the math all in my head right now, but my guess is there's a bunch of infinite combo type shenanigans with this card.
Yeah, the cost is very cheap to make a clone of something, one in a green, and all it requires is a creature entering the battlefield. So that usually just screams, hey, this is going to be powerful.
You pair it up with Panharmonicon type stuff too, go insane. Yeah. This card seems insanely powerful, yeah. Okay, the next one is... Let me find it.
This is the one that you like the most.
Oh, yeah.
That you kind of referenced.
This is Pyr's Whim, which is 3 and a green for a sorcery. For each player, choose friend or foe. For each friend... each friend searches their library for a land card, puts it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffles their library. A land card, not a basic land.
Mm-hmm.
Each foe sacrifices an artifact or enchantment they control. This is a huge swing. This is brutal. Even if you just go, I get a land, everybody else sacrifices an artifact or enchantment.
You know what you should do, Archenemy? Hey, guys, let's all get strip mines, and then we'll all strip mine the Archenemy's land
at
the
same time.
Yeah, you
could totally do that. And they had to sacrifice an artifact or enchantment. Yeah. Oh, man, can you imagine?
You make them sacrifice Crucible of Worlds. I did it. It's the ultimate feel bad with Pyr's Whim.
What's the Demolish?
Oh, the one that gets rid of four things?
Yeah. This is pretty close, maybe better.
Oh, you're thinking of Decimate.
Oh, right. I think this might be better than Decimate.
Yeah, well, you get a ramp out of it. Decimate just makes enemies. This actually can make friends. Right?
Or foes.
Yeah, mostly. Yeah. I mean, I feel like you're going to be usually making more foes than not, but, you know, who knows? All right, into black. Let's talk about...
This is a Jimmy card.
Stunning Reversal.
It feels like a... Goes with Final Fortune, or what's the other one?
Oh, definitely with Final Fortune. Anytime you have a card that says you're going to lose the game, you play Stunning Reversal instead, and you grip on with three fingers. It's a rock climber, too, man. I'm all about this. 3 and a black for an instant.
Look at the hair.
The next time you would lose the game this turn, instead draw 7 cards, and your life total becomes 1, and then you exile this instant. So you save yourself from death 1 time, and then you draw 7 cards.
But your life total becomes 1.
You're going to lose anyway.
That's
but
a good point. If you played Final Fortune, you were like doing it on purpose.
Yeah, someone just pings you. Like, sorry.
I like it. It could be a dead card a lot of times, but I guess if you're sitting there with 1 dead card, you're going to die, then you're going to use that.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, I think it's pretty funny.
It wouldn't work against, say, the Shadowborn Apostles deck, because you're like, okay, but in response to that, I sack all these guys and still kill you.
Yeah, you're dead no matter what.
Okay, the next one is, how do you say this?
Vertices.
Vertices Maneuver. It's 2 and a black for a sorcery. For each player, choose friend or foe. I'm getting all the friend or foe ones.
I know, I like it.
Each friend returns a creature card from their graveyard to their hand, and each foe sacrifices a creature. 3 mana.
3 mana for an entire... It's an edict effect, right? You can make it into...
Worst case scenario, everybody else sacks a creature, and you return one.
Yeah, but you Fleshbag Marauder, but you don't have to play a creature, and you don't have to sacrifice a creature. You can actually bring a creature back to your hand. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
I like these friend or foes.
I like all of them.
Yeah.
I think they're going to see a lot of play just because it's... Interesting. It's something we've never really seen before either. Gang Up is X and a black with an instant with assist. So another player can pay up to X of the mana cost. Destroy a target creature with power X or less. That's cool. I can definitely see this being like, guys, I have a kill spell. I need your help.
You know, we always talk about on the show how, like, if you can use your words and get somebody else to use a card.
Right.
How powerful that is to get them to use their resources to remove something you want removed.
Mm-hmm.
This has a similar effect, I think, because somebody using a certain amount of their mana, maybe even a lot of their mana, could be like, you know, how much of half of their turn. If your words can get somebody to use half of their turn, that's pretty valuable too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's true.
And in this case, for Gang Up, I think you could find a lot of spots where, like, yeah, you want something gone, but somebody else wants it gone more than you, and you can be like, listen, I'll donate the card part of this, but you got to do the mana part.
Yeah.
And that's pretty powerful, because in a lot of decks... You're going to have 12, 13 cards sometimes, and you don't care about the card as much. And the mana is actually more valuable.
The mana, again, we say if you can play multiple cards in a turn, you are fast-tracking your way to victory, and all of the assist cards do that.
And there's a way to do that, right? I want to kill that creature, but I need five more mana to do everything I want to do. Well, if I can convince, you know, Craig to pay the five mana because he wants that dead too, now I can cast another spell this turn or, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I dig it. I think it's going to be pretty good. I think that card itself is going to be better than it looks. The next one I just wanted to mention because it has an interesting text again. It's fan favorite, 3 and a black. 2/2 human rogue has assist, so any player can pay up to 3 of it, but also has this weird ability. If you pay two colon fan favorite gets +1/+1 until end of turn, but any player may activate this ability.
So it's got assist on the card, but with an older sort of mechanic, because we've seen this on some cards before where any player can pay for it, the design underhanded designs one.
So Craig, this is interesting, right, because if somebody is at a low life total, you might be able to team up with other people to pump it enough to do something. Or like, hey, I'll block. Will you help me kill the thing I'm blocking?
Right.
That kind of stuff. I just thought it was interesting. It's interesting design space they found.
Yeah. One last black card we should mention, because it's brand new, is Archfiend of Despair. We've had Archfiend of Depravity. And
no,
Ifnir.
I think this is a reprint.
No, it's not. It's brand new.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I looked it up. 6 black/black for a 6/6 creature demon flying. Your opponents can't gain life, and at the beginning of each end step, each opponent loses life equal to the life that player lost this turn. So kind of wound reflections them. At the beginning of each end step, too. So this means this could end a game really quickly if everyone's attacking, because every single time an opponent loses life, they're going to lose double that life. But you, fortunately, don't lose any, which
is
nice.
You want to play that with however you say that.
Verdurus.
That does the combat damage lose half your life
thing. Oh, yeah.
Because, you know. Then they die
real quickly. So, but it's an 8-drop for a 6/6. I can definitely see this for all of the Timmies out there. I like this card too. So,
okay, let's go on to blue.
Okay,
this is a really interesting one. It's called.
I like this card a lot.
Arcane Artisan.
Also, if they release a trailer for this set and this card isn't featured in the trailer, I would be very surprised.
Yeah. Well, it's very easy to animate, too. Yeah, as far as the type of pose and everything.
Arcane Arisen is doing her best Liliana impression right now.
That's actually a good point. It's 2 and a blue for an 0/3 human wizard. You can pay 2 and a blue and tap the Arcane Artisan, and then target player draws a card, then exiles a card from their hand. If a creature card is exiled this way, that player creates a token that's a copy of that card. So they exile the actual card, but they get a token of it. And then when Arcane Artisan leaves the battlefield, exile all tokens created with it at the beginning of the next end step.
So you still get them for a little bit.
For a little
usually
while.
When this card flies out, it would usually kill everything, but this is cool.
I mean, it sort of could work with ETB decks like Rune, Brago.
Yeah.
Just to get the creature out for cheaper.
Two and a blue to cheat a creature out in mono blue is something that mono blue does not have the ability to do.
Yeah, and you know, it can be, I don't know, Ulamog or something. Not Nulamog because it's a cast trigger, but like old school Ulamog or Kozilek.
Anything that enters the battlefield with Palancron, dude. You could Palancron on turn 3 with this.
Actually, new Kozilek would be pretty good because you can still do the thing where you discard a card to counter spells.
Yeah.
And that's just like huge Eldrazi. You could do, like I said, anything with ETBs. Palancron's a good one, of course.
Either way, blue.
There's got to be some ways to break this too.
Yeah,
some stuff that enters untaps.
100%. Yeah, there are ways to break this.
Yeah. Okay.
Xander Splits Judgment is next. 4 and a blue. I love this guy. Look at him. He's so cute.
I like how we didn't mention this because I didn't even notice it, but they paired up a Cyclops and a Homunculus, which are two creatures that have one eye. So together they have the normal amount of eyes.
Yeah, it's great. Xander Splits Judgment, 4 and a blue for a sorcery. For each player, choose friend or foe. Hey, I got one. Each friend creates a token that's a copy of a creature they control, and each foe returns a creature they control to its owner's hand. So 5 mana, make everyone bounce a creature.
And you get a copy?
And you get a copy, yeah, that's pretty cool.
That right there is insane. A clone costs 4 mana. So for the 1 extra blue, you added everybody else bounces one of their creatures. Now they get to choose.
That's like a 4 for 1.
It's pretty great value-wise. And then, you can just sometimes make the deals. Like, will you create a copy of that Reclamation Sage?
Yeah,
and
blow
get rid
this
of
up.
This, of
yeah,
this
yeah,
artifact,
yeah.
And, you know, I'll make you a friend or blah, blah, blah. Pretty sweet. The next one is Game Plan, 5 and a blue for a sorcery. Has assist. Another player can pay up to 5 of this spell's mana cost. Each player shuffles their hand and graveyard into their library, then draws 7 cards. Exile Game Plan.
It could be a 1 mana wheel.
Yeah, and there's a lot of points in the game if somebody's a little bit mana screwed or whatever, where people want this to happen. You could, I think a lot of times you can find a player that's willing to pay for part of this.
And your deck wants to do it, right?
Yep.
So it's really interesting because, you know, if sometimes when someone wheels, you're like, thank goodness, I didn't have to spend any mana to do it. I can draw these cards. But now you're forcing that player, if they're behind a little bit. For instance, in our last game nights, I would have done anything to have this card.
I'll pay four, man. I'll pay five.
I don't care. Send it all away, please. All right, next up we have Spellseeker, another awesome art. It's a 1/1 creature human wizard for 2 and a blue. When Spellseeker enters the battlefield, you may search your library for an instant or sorcery card with converted mana cost 2 or less. Reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. That is awesome. It is a really specific kind of tutor in the same way that Trinket Mages and those stuff find artifacts of a certain cost.
I saw somebody called this Thinkit Mage.
Thinkit Mage? Oh, that's funny. But it's 2 or less. It's a very interesting number because usually the 3 mana, you know, it's 1, 3, or 5, I think, with the artifact ones. But this is searching for 2. So I'm guessing they did that for balance reasons.
You know what costs 2 mana and is an instant or sorcery?
Counterspell?
Cyclonic Rift.
Oh, no. Yep, you're right. When I said, oh, no, I was just thinking about someone doing this.
So this is just a second Cyclonic Rift. Yeah. 3 mana. That's, I wish they would have just said sorcery, you know? Because that seems really good. And yeah, to be able to flicker it and stuff.
Yeah. You could build a whole deck kind of around that.
It's possible this is the best card in the set for Commander. Just because like it goes one and gets the best card in Commander besides Sol Ring. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Fine. You got it.
This next one's sweet. It's called Fumble.
I love this.
So
you
first
can also
of all, the fact that it's
out,
called Fumble
way
is good. Yeah, yeah. You can search this out with the Spellseeker. All right. It's 1 and a blue for an instant. Return target creature to its owner's hand. And then, crap, I clicked on it. Gain control of all auras and equipments that were attached to it. And then attach them to another creature.
What? It balances a Voltron Commander, and then it lets you reattach everything and the auras too. That's the funny part. You're gonna get the auras,
dude.
So
brutal.
What?
The one thing I'll say about Voltron decks is everyone's like, "Why are they hampering Voltron?" Because Voltron's already not a great strategy. Almost always, Voltron strategies first thing they put on gives hexproof, right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
they know this. That, but if they don't. If they go like Sword of Feast of Famine,
where everyone's playing a Glaring
into
Spotlight,
something else, yeah, and then you go Fumble, I get all the stuff that was on your card.
Instant speed, by the way, so you don't even need to do this until the last moment, and then you unequip, you untap, and you're just ready to rock. You can put it onto another creature too, so you can put it onto another player, and then that player can kill them with their own stuff. Oh my gosh, it's brutal.
Plus, you still control the equipment, so you could be like, I'll give it to you, but then I'm gonna re-equip on my turn.
Yeah, you gain
too
control of it. That's right. Yeah. So you can actually re-equip it because you gain control of it. Wow, no thanks. I don't ever want to get fumbled. Fun interaction in Two-Headed Giant. If your partner is playing a Voltron Commander, this is a great way for you to save all of their stuff and then stick it on your own creature.
Oh, that's interesting. Or you could do a thing where you both attack, but they block theirs.
Yeah, and then you switch it over. Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. I really want to win a game like that now.
That would be sweet. I want to play Two-Headed Giant with this.
Okay, more awesome sports references. This next card is called Out of Bounds. 3 and a blue for an instant with assist. Now this one's actually absurd. So another player can pay up to 3 mana of the spell's cost, of the generic mana. Counter target spell. 1 mana counter spell. We found it. We made it happen. Thanks, Wizards.
I think it's really good.
It is amazing! Because when you're countering something, there's someone else that's going to want to counter it.
A lot of times. Like, think to all the games you've played when something that you're countering is happening, it's usually bad for everybody.
Yeah.
That's why you're countering it. Now, sometimes you're using your counterspell to protect your win condition or your combo or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's definitely a thing. But a lot of times you're using it to stop a board wipe or to stop a Cyclonic Rift or to stop a combo piece from hitting the table that's going to destroy you. And you can also, I think with this one, a lot of times it's safe to only leave up 1 blue mana.
Yep.
And then just say, I have this. I only have 1 blue mana, though. Look. And force them to pay the 3, and then you're hampering the person that paid the 3 because their turn is hampered by having less mana available and stopping a spell.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
It's weird. I don't even know how to classify it. It's not 2 for 1, but you get like 1 and a mana for 1.
It's like a tempo for 1.
Tempo for 1. There
tempo
you go.
For 1? I don't know.
All right, let's move on to the multicolored cards. This first one's really interesting.
Yeah, so this is inspired by Game Night's Last One Standing.
Yeah, of course.
Only one may stand.
And it's a goblin holding a red sword, so we all know what that means. I'm never getting mana screwed again.
Pulling out of my driveway.
Woo!
You know what that means. In Dominaria, they had dub, which we didn't call out.
Yeah.
So I think they're watching Game Nights because they're dubbing people, and now they're calling out Only One May Stand. Okay.
Only one may last one standing.
It's 1, a black, and a red for a sorcery. Choose a creature at random, then destroy the rest.
I don't want to know how this is going to work when you have a table with like 50 things on it.
You got to count them all and assign them all a number and then roll a dice.
Or do like a random number generator, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Destroy the rest for 3 mana. It's a board wipe in Rakdos, and it just blows everything up except for one random creature. That's a cheap board wipe.
That's a super cheap board wipe. This is, I think, very, very good.
Yeah, I love it.
Most of the time when you're like, I need to wrath all the creatures, it's because there's quite a few of them that are bad for you.
Yeah, not just one. Yeah. And again, the chance of that one staying around is pretty low if there are a lot around the board. But even if there's like 4 or 5 creatures, the chances of that one staying alive are still pretty low.
Yeah.
So
maybe 25 or 20%. This gets around like Gaddock Teague too, which, you know, in certain play groups is a thing. So yeah, I like this card.
Azra Oddsmaker, really interesting card.
Another Azra.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. It's an Azra Warrior. It's 1 black and a red for a 3/3 creature warrior, Azra Warrior. At the beginning of combat on your turn, you may discard a card. If you do, choose a creature. Whenever that creature deals combat damage to a player this turn, you draw 2 cards. So you discard the card first, and then you try and get that creature to attack and not be blocked or get damage through. So it's a little more risky, but you do get 2 cards back.
2 cards for the one, and you're in the colors that maybe don't care. They got squeeze and stuff.
True, true.
I was thinking your Neheb deck might like that card.
I don't want to talk about that deck anymore.
You just own the deck.
We may be retiring that one soon. Or just putting in only 2 drops.
Okay, the last one is Archon of Valor's Reach. It's 4 green white for a 5/6 creature Archon. Has flying, vigilance, and trample. As Archon of Valor's Reach enters the battlefield, choose artifact, enchantment, instant sorcery, or planeswalker. Players can't cast spells of the chosen type.
Get rid of instant speed removal. In limited, this thing will just win the game.
It's like Meddling Mage, but instead of one specific card, for a specific card type.
That's crazy. You could just shut out the Planeswalker deck.
Yeah. People were asking us a few episodes ago how to beat Super Friends. Play Archon of Valor's Reach and name Planeswalker.
Yeah, or, you know, I really hope I open this if I do get to play some limited events, because this looks insane.
If you say... Oh, it doesn't have creature.
Yeah, you can't say creature.
Because in limited, that'd be way too good.
Yeah, that'd be way too good. But the fact that you can get rid of instants or sorceries if you know they have some kind of removal, which means it just protects itself in a bizarre way because it can't even cast instants anymore. You know, like, that's crazy.
I think just saying sorcery is kind of like what Gaddock Teague does, right? It'll just turn off most board wipes. There's a few, but the chances that a deck has a board wipe it can cast, like Toxic Deluge, last one standing, you know, Terminus and whatever else you want to name, most of them are sorceries. So if you just said, I like my board, play this, name sorcery.
They got to get rid of that creature before they do anything else. And a lot of times, kill spells are sorcery speed.
And a lot of times, that's like, well, that's their turn, get rid of that creature. And now they're like, I hope I make it back so I can now cast my wrath. And now your board was safe for the one turn you needed to win. I like this card a lot.
I like winning.
Okay, now we're on to artifacts. There's only a couple.
Thank goodness. Well, my throat hurts. We've been talking for a while. Sentinel Tower, it's a 4-drop artifact. Whenever an instant or sorcery spell is cast during your turn, Sentinel Tower deals damage to any target equal to 1 plus the number of instant and sorcery spells cast before that spell this turn. So it's kind of like you're building on your old spells. It's
a stormy.
It's stormy-esque, yeah. If you're casting a lot of Mizzix,
mm-hmm.
If you're casting a lot of instant and sorceries, it's going to do 1 damage at first, and then 2, and then 3, and then 4, and it's just going to keep climbing up and up. If you storm count like 5, each one of those copies is going to count for the prior copy cast.
Oh, jeez.
So you're just going pop, 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 pop. This is the kind of card which is remove on sight if you see it in certain decks, by far. It's just because it's like, oh, if they untap and are able to do the thing, we're all going to die.
It's worded really strangely because it says Sentinel Tower deals damage to any target equal to 1 plus the number of instant.
Right.
I'm assuming because you control the Sentinel Tower that you control the target.
I guess so. I mean, it's similar to Aetherflux Reservoir too, in a way where it wants you to cast a lot of spells.
But this will count other people's casting of spells. It just counts the number of
spells. Yes, during your turn. So if someone starts counter-warring you, then Sentinel Tower just starts beaming them in the face. You know,
could you
imagine? Like 6 spells in, they're like, all right, we're in a time stop. You're like, all right, take 7. and by the way, it's any target, so you can also just start clearing out the board too if you need to.
Yeah, you can just get rid of those pesky creatures and things like that.
Yeah.
Planeswalkers.
This card's crazy.
I think there's probably a lot of stormy type decks where it's going to be really good.
Yeah.
Okay, the last artifact is Victory Chimes. It's 3 mana for an artifact. You untap Victory Chimes during each other player's untap step, and you can tap it, and a player of your choice adds one diamond or a colorless mana to their mana pool. So you can donate that mana or you can use it yourself, but it untaps on everybody's turn.
So you're always getting one mana back from it, which is kind of cool.
If you can use it, I think that's...
Activated abilities, for sure.
Yeah, any deck that has like Joyra, Thrasios, those kind of Slimefoot, you know, activated abilities, this is great. Also, there's a lot of bartering potential. I could give you one mana, and it doesn't cost you much.
Yeah, it doesn't cost you much at all.
Yeah, because a lot of decks will play a three mana mana rock, but you know, you want it to add color, but it's not that big of a hit if one of them didn't. It's just, it's still ramping you.
Yeah. This is like assist, but on a card-esque kind of thing. It's like you're assisting other people with
mana.
Yeah,
it's like reverse assist. Yeah, it kind of gives all their spells a little bit assist.
Yeah, just like, hey, I can help a little bit if you want, but only once this turn. And then it might help the next person the next turn, unless you got something that you want this turn. Imagine if someone else had like a Joyra and you started feeling their Joyra. Don't do that.
Don't ever do that.
All right, the last cards we have here are the land cycle we talked about, which are very special. There's Bountiful Promenade, Luxury Suite,
Honestly,
Morphic
these
Pool,
are probably the best cards in the set.
Sea Commander. Of Clouds, yeah, and Spire Garden. So they're the allied pairs, and they all say, this land enters the battlefield tapped unless you have two or more opponents, and then they add two colors. They can add either green or white if it's the Selesnya one, black or red if it's Rakdos, yada yada yada. By the way, I love the black or red one because it's always like blood crypt, like dark thing and blood.
Yeah,
and this one is like luxury suites.
This is like you just have the best seats in the house.
It's great. Yeah, yeah. The view is rivaled only by the decadence of the decor. It's cool.
Yeah, so there's five of them for the allied pairs. These are functionally dual lands for a lot of people. They can't be fetched. We talked about this earlier on the last episode, because they don't have the basic land types. So they don't say like swamp, mountain.
Yeah.
So that's the only downside of these. Otherwise, they would straight up be dual lands. I like this design space, right? Because they're obviously not quite as good as the Underground Seas and stuff. But for shock lands, it's pretty close.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look. If you can't search it out, not a huge deal. But you were going to play this if you play multiplayer most of the time, because it's just a land that comes in and taps for two mana. Even just drawing it is good enough, honestly.
Yep. Yeah, I think those are great.
It really helps in a lot of the two and the five-color decks, too. I would play definitely a few of these. Especially because not everyone's going to be able to afford all the shocks as well as all of the original duels. You know, this just gives players more options and keeps it, you know, they don't power it up to the point where all of it, for instance, if they had the basic land types, these would cost a lot more, I think. I think they would jump up in price. So I actually like the fact that they don't, because we do have other lands that have been given to us, like the cycle lands that have that land type, so you can search them up still. These are just like, hope you draw it, and you hope you have two or more opponents. Otherwise, they just become a Guildgate.
In some decks, you're running three, four of them.
Yeah.
In five color decks, you're running all five. Like, they're just that good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Now it's time to talk about the best of the set, what Josh and I believe to be the best cards. What do you think, Josh, is the best new commander?
Yeah, this is a hard one.
I have a vote, even though it's probably not the best. It's just probably the most fun.
Okay. We're going to do this thing where we count down and then we both say it at the same time.
Okay.
Okay. So, okay. Mine's kind of obvious. All right.
Three, two, one. Grothama, all devouring.
The Blade Blossom. I chose the five color one.
Yeah, I was going to choose the five color one, and then I was like, you know what? This worm is just too good to pass up.
Grothama is pretty cool, and the more I think about the deck, the more I think it will be fun to build.
It's just fun to build, yeah. It's not the best new commander. I think it is the Wooburg commander. I would agree that Najeela is probably the best still.
Five color. That's just fun.
But Grothama is just ridiculous.
Grothama is pretty sweet.
I want everyone to try and kill Grothama and then just blow them out of the water. And he stays alive.
I feel like it will alter the game a lot. When you play in a Grothama game, your decisions are very different than they would be in a normal game. Because every time you're going to attack, 100%. You have to think like, do I want to try to go for that big worm? Do I want to try?
It's like a boss. It's like a mini boss, dude. It's amazing. In my mono red burn deck, I'm trying to kill Grothama immediately.
It's like in League of Legends where you're like, is it time to go after the dragon?
Yeah.
But
it's Grothama all devouring.
And if you go after the dragon, the other team like jumps you there. It's bad. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Okay. Let's talk about the best overall card in the set.
Oh, geez.
This one's tough.
I think I know which one.
Not including reprints. So best new card in the
best
set.
Best new card? Okay.
All right, I got mine.
Okay, you ready? Trace, Dos, 1.
Uno.
Play of the game.
Oh, Piers Whim.
Oh, Piers Whim. Okay, so I like play of the game just because it's
play of the game, the white exile.
Yeah, 6 white, white exile yeah. with assist. I think that's the one that really takes it above the rest for me. And Piers Whim, what's up about Whim?
Piers Whim is 3 and a green for the sorcery. Oh, yes. Friend or foe, friend's ramp for a land card, and foes sacrifice an artifact or enchantment. I actually think that's going to go in a lot of green decks, maybe even most green decks.
Yeah, for 4 mana. It's, you know, even 4 mana just getting any land is pretty darn good, honestly. So
think about turn 4, I get a land, everybody else destroys a Signet.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
It's just great. You just reverse ramped everybody else and ramped yourself.
You know what I wish? I wish this set was legal for Brawl.
Yeah.
New format.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Yeah. Okay, I want to add a category really quick.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, this is going to be obvious. I was going to say best reprint.
Oh, doubling season.
It's just doubling season. Okay, never mind. You know, there's no drama
wait,
there.
Wait, Seaborn Muse is pretty good, too, because not every deck needs honestly, doubling season, but every deck could use Seaborn Muse.
Honestly, I have more Seaborn Muses in decks than I do doubling season.
Oh, 100%. Now, doubling season is very specific. It's just the highest in price, I think.
And I have some decks where I would say that the Seaborn Muse is as powerful as a doubling season is when it's at its most powerful in its deck.
Yeah.
You know, where Seaborn Muse, like in the Tim deck, is like as good as a doubling season would be in a Planeswalker.
We don't have the Prophet of Kruphix anymore, and anything we can do to pay homage to that is it's well worth it.
True, true, true. Okay, time for two of the listeners. What cards are you most excited about from Battle Bond, and for which of your decks? Are there any cool combos that you see or synergies, either with Battle Bond cards exclusively or them paired with cards from the past?
Yeah.
Definitely in the comment section, it'll be fun to see what kind of brewing people are doing, even if it's not an entire deck. It's just, oh, I see this particular interaction or synergy.
Yeah, and patrons in the Discord, we're doing this too to try and find the greatest combo. So we'll be doing this throughout the month. So if you have 3 card combos, I want to see like a 10 card combo too. But yeah, post in the Discord if you're on there, patrons. 10
card combo? It's like any 10 cards in Magic.
Yeah, exactly. It's a combo! It's like, yeah, correct. They work together.
Well, when you find out what those 10 card combos are, you're going to need to, you know, buy those 10 cards. And the best place to go do that is at cardkingdom.com/commandzone. Yeah. If you use that affiliate link, you really are keeping the lights here on at Game Nights and at the Command Zone podcast. We super appreciate everybody who is always tweeting at us and letting us know that they're using our affiliate link. And Card Kingdom is awesome. They ship you the stuff as fast as possible. They also do custom tokens.
Yeah, I've been retweeting a lot of them. Someone did one of you in your Pharaoh hat from the Amonkhet episode
that we did. You had your sailor
from VGHS. That was really funny. It's a company that cares about their customers, and it's a company that is very front-facing with their customer service as well as what they do. And honestly, the actual physical storefront is also the best LGS in Seattle, bar none.
Yeah, it's great to have them as a sponsor because it's something we can really get behind. And our other sponsor, Ultra Pro, just as awesome. They've really been with us for a long time. And they make the highest quality stuff there is, hands down. You know, when we chose to print our Last Stand playmat, we only went with Ultra Pro because we knew they were going to print the highest quality thing. So if you get a playmat, if you get sleeves, if you get a binder, whatever you get, if it's Ultra Pro, you know it's going to be high quality.
Yep, and they're actually printing our Last Stand playmats right now as we speak. So thank you all so much for anyone that donated to the campaign that's going to get a playmat. We're hoping to get these out to you sooner than we did last time. We're going to try our best. We're working with an actual fulfillment center this time to make sure that there are no lost packages. Doing it all ourselves, as we've learned with our parties and stuff, is very difficult. So
we're not
big
doing
thanks.
That again. My hands still hurt from that.
Yeah, so honestly, thank you so much, Ultra Pro, for helping assist in that. Again, great companies, both Card Kingdom and Ultra Pro.
I do want to say patrons who did qualify, your playmats will be going out of at the same time. So.
Correctamundo.
Okay, now it's time for the end step where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic.
You looking at me?
I am because I don't have anything. Are you looking at me?
Let's talk about... Did I ever talk about this show on this show? I mentioned it to you the other day. It's an older show that I watched. It was, I think it was on Cartoon Network or Adult Swim, one or the other. It's called Over the Garden Wall.
Oh, I think you mentioned this. I haven't even heard of it.
So it's a really amazing show. It was done by someone that was an ex-alum of Adventure Time. And it's got Elijah Wood as one of the voices. You may know him as Frodo, of course. But Over the Garden Wall is a sort of like a Grimm's fairy tale story. It's a very short animated show. There's 10 episodes total, and it's about two brothers, Wirt and Greg, and they get lost in a forest called the Unknown. It's like a forest adrift in time, and there's 10 episodes, I think 8 or 10. It's Patrick McHale is the program creator, and each of the, it's like they're going into the forest and more secrets are revealed, talking animals, crazy, yeah, creepy things. And it's very musical based as well. There's lots of songs throughout all of it. It's really like creepy, cute, and fun, and very lighthearted at the same time, pretty dark and twisted and weird. It's exactly where I like cartoons to be when I watch them. Because, you know, as an adult, you're watching an animated show, and the people that made the show are adults as well, and they're oftentimes making it either just for adults or they're making it for kids and adults at the same time. So in this case, I think it's definitely more of an adult-based show. Ashley Birch is also on one of the episodes as a voice. Cool. Yeah, so it's a great show all across. The songs are great. The show itself is dark and creepy. If you like Grimm's fairy tales and that sort of world of storytelling, you will really like it. And it takes about a movie's length to watch the entire series.
Oh, so all 10 episodes or whatever there are there.
Yeah, it's like an hour and a half-ish.
Total.
Oh. Yeah, it's great, though.
What's it called again?
Over the Garden Wall.
All right, we'll definitely check it out. Something else you should check out is the Masters of Modern podcast. Bingo. Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman, they talk about the modern format and all things competitive magic. You can find them at collective.company right next to us or on Twitter at the MMcast.
Our editor for the show is Craig Blanchett, Mr. Infect, everybody's favorite, the man with the rings.
Everybody's favorite?
I love Craig.
I mean, when he's killing you with Infect, he's my favorite.
I still love Craig when he does that to me. Because I'm like, Craig, you know what? This doesn't happen often.
That's a lie. I've seen you die to Infect, and you do not love Craig in that moment.
No, no one actually loves Craig in that moment. All right. I'm glad when the dog has not bitten onto me. So make sure you check out the video versions of this podcast at youtube.com/thecommandzonepodcast. It features, of course, the wonderful animations of Jeffrey Palmer. You can find him online at Living Cards MTG. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. We are getting up there. It's awesome to see that number climb as we release more Game Nights episodes. And make sure you check out the last Game Nights episode. It's a fun one.
Yeah, for sure.
Prof and Wedge.
Can't beat that.
I almost said Prof and the Wedge instead of the Prof and Wedge.
The Wedge.
The Wedge from Manasaurus.
I'm told they will both be at GP Vegas. I'll see if I can't convince them to play in that Commander Championship.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
And you know Wedge is playing that Angus McKenzie deck and making the tournament go forever.
Oh, I do not want to be in his pot.
That would be really funny if someone had a deck that was just about making everyone draw, and then maybe they would have to redistribute the prize
to, like,
packs.
Change the entire,
because if it's a four-man pod tournament. And it's 60-20-20-20,
feels like something Wedge would probably do.
So it's 120, so everyone would get 30 tickets instead. Hey, that's actually pretty good. That's good value, except for the winner, who is everyone, I guess.
We all win. We're all winners here.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, everybody, thanks for listening,
and we will see you next time.
Peace.
For your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.